Welcome to the Art of Advising podcast. I'm your host, Meredith Parker. I am an advisor at the University of Arizona serving the online student population. The question that we posed was, are new college students prepared for college writing and what steps can we take to help students? And I would love for you all to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about yourselves before we dive into that question.
So I'm Erin Wittig. I am currently the Assistant Director of Placement and Assessment for the University of Arizona Writing Program.
Hi, I am Alex Nelson-Turner. I use she, her pronouns. I am the current Graduate Assistant Director of Writing and Placement and Assessment at the University of Arizona. I handle the transfer students. One thing that we do offer here at the University of Arizona is students can choose to submit a portfolio instead of taking the regular foundations writing classes if they believe that the writing artifacts that they're choosing to reflect on adequately demonstrate what they would be learning in that foundations writing curriculum. And so one of the things that I think about the word preparedness is that they're probably prepared for foundations writing curriculum, but the thing that they struggle with or tend to struggle with is talking about how their previous writing experiences fit into their overall academic trajectory at the University of Arizona.
And once upon a time when we had talked previously, you mentioned the process for the placement assessment, trying really hard not to call it a test. Can you talk a little bit about what a student goes through? Because I think it's very different from at the U of A than maybe other institutions are doing.
We moved away from using standardized tests. How aligned, how much construct validity do you have? And the construct validity for the SAT and the ACT to our writing program and the things that we expect is crap. there's like no or virtually no alignment from our perspective. If you talk to other people and they might say, oh yeah, there's perfect alignment. If a student is able to complete one of the analogies where it's like, this is to this as this is to this. If a student is able to complete those, well, of course, they have like an understanding of vocabulary. So that means they are a good writer, right? This equals this. But for us, what a good writer means is so rich. That picture of a good writer is so rich. It includes process, right? Like how a student approaches a writing task. It includes how they interact with other writers, so collaboration and revision, how they think about themselves as writers, how they reflect on their own writing. So this picture of good writing, from our perspective, is not captured by an SAT or ACT. So getting back to the preparation, it's really difficult to measure that preparation, right? Because where a student is coming from is going to define that preparation. And what we're trying to do with our placement is capture the biggest picture of that preparation that we possibly can in one tool that doesn't put a ton of burden on the student or on administrators who are doing that placement. What we do is we present the students with descriptions of the various courses that we have. So we have, a supported course, and then we have 101, which is sort of our no frills version. We have 109, which is our accelerated, historically honored. We have multilingual options of those as well. So students get all of these descriptions in what we call our handy guide. So they link out to the handy guide and ostensibly, ideally, they read those descriptions very thoroughly. And then they do a self-assessment. So they answer questions about their reading and writing background, their literacy experiences, and then they answer some questions about their learning preferences. So how much support they want in a writing class. And then they're shown a recommendation. They're told that that recommendation is just a recommendation, and then they can reject it if they want, take something else. Because we don't presume to know all the different reasons why they might choose a course. And we're also not going to tell them that those reasons are wrong. So, you know, if they want to take the supported course, even if, for example, they've done like AP courses throughout high school and have been told they're a really good writer, if they want to do the supported course because they want that additional credit hour, I'm not going to tell them no. I am going to encourage them, you know, and to really think about their experiences and do they really want that additional hour per week? Then they answer some questions about dual enrollment and English exams, because those things can impact what course they take. And ultimately, they are given the final choice.
Way to pitch it to me. I feel like I need to go give myself this assessment.
I know. I'm sure everyone is sold now because it sounds so simple.
Yes. Now, we also talked about what happens if a student is misplaced. So if they start the semester and they're like, wow, I don't need this additional support. I'm amazing. I'm this great writer and I made a mistake, or, you know, whatever the case may be. What happens then?
I primarily see this with our international students, not so much with the domestic students. Typically, they'll actually catch it early or even before the classes actually start. So if domestic students have questions about their placement, it's usually a matter of like scheduling conflict. But for the international students, who I could talk forever about this. So one of the first things that I sort of have to talk them through is that the 106 course is not a remedial course. It's not a course that further evaluates language proficiency, because you already did that with the language proficiency exam. So why would we make you go through an additional semester trying to prove that to us? And one of the things that our advisors can do is not frame the courses as, you know, domestic versus international students, because what that tends to do is it creates this sort of, dare I say, inferiority complex, because lots of international students will email me essentially pleading their case that they shouldn't be in the international student focused curriculum because they're fluent English speakers, because they have experience taking courses in English. Like, one of the things I would implore for academic advisors is to frame the courses as, you know, what they need in terms of support and what they need to be successful, because we have lots of international students that do end up going through our 101, 102 curriculums and doing absolutely amazing. And then other students do end up switching back to the international support focused curriculum because they're not able to engage in the curriculum the ways that feel most useful to them as multilingual and multinational speakers.
I did not realize that so many students were anxious about possibly what course they decide that they want to select. So that's really interesting information to know. A few minutes ago, you mentioned the portfolio option. Is that transfer students across the board, whether they're international, domestic, they all have this option?
I would say that it's primarily for domestic students, just because international students, once you sort of explain the kinds of support that they'll be getting with the international student support focused curriculum, they tend to gravitate towards those more because they'll know that they'll be getting, you know, direct support from their instructor. With the transfer portfolio, we recommend that option to students who already have some kind of foundations writing experience already coming into the institution. It's typically students who either their credits didn't articulate for 101 or 102 credit, for students who haven't taken a course in a long time but still have writing artifacts from either their professional development workplaces, from their prior institutions if they still have access to them. Also to students who just know that they already have enough writing experience that taking a class wouldn't necessarily be beneficial to them and would actually put them behind in terms of their academic trajectory. And these are some of the talking points that I go through with those students who are interested in that option.
Are you the one, and maybe grading is not the right term, but are you the one that looks them over personally and says yes, no? And if it is you, what is it you're actually trying to find or sift through with these artifacts to see if they have this?
When I first started doing the evaluations for the transfer portfolios, it was very nerve-wracking because I didn't want to be the sole person to determine whether or not a student would pass the transfer portfolio because, you know, depending on where they were coming from, if they were coming back from a long absence at the university, if they were, you know, just trying to finish their degree, if they were switching degrees, it felt really difficult to make those decisions because I could ultimately be the one to, you know, either set them back from their academic trajectory or have some other kind of negative impact. But thankfully, Aaron was very supportive and like talked me down from the ledge.
I'm just gonna say, like, I have been part of the transfer portfolio process since I came in 2014, right? Like, I inherited it from, you know, the program had been doing it. They didn't have to like reflect on it. They didn't have to contextualize anything. And we literally sat down and just read these completely decontextualized papers. So there would be like, you know, something about architecture. And I'd be like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be looking for right now. I can tell you that no matter how much science we cram on top of our writing assessment, at the end of the day, it still feels a little bit subjective, right? It's like, well, what's good writing? I know it when I see it, right? It's like, it's always going to feel a little bit that way, no matter how many parameters we put around it.
You had some interesting faculty stories last time we talked. And maybe Alex has some interesting faculty stories. Would you care to share any of them to help advisors get an idea of where students might be coming from?
When we were asking for instructors to submit portfolios, and I had asked for this particular instructor for four portfolios from four different students, and I got an email back that said, oh, LOL, could you ask for four other ones because these don't make me look very good as a teacher? And he was like, JK, but kind of not. And I was like, what? And then he proceeded to say, this student who was in this 101 class, this student should have been in English 106 because they're a non-native speaker and blah, 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 all of the attendant biases and assumptions about that student. And I was like, huh, interesting. But this student was in 101. So I looked the student up. So first, I looked in our International Foundation's writing evaluation. Lo and behold, the student's not there. And I'm like, huh, I wonder if they took the main campus Foundation's writing evaluation. So I go there, and there they are. So this distinction, by the way, means that they are not, quote unquote, an international student. They don't have a F1 visa status. So they must have a residency or something, or they were, you know, born here and they grew up in a multilingual house, all kinds of things, right? These distinctions are not clear about, especially when it comes to linguistic background, but also when it comes to like IPEDS, race and ethnicity categories, you know, it runs the gamut and we can't make a bunch of assumptions about a student just based on how they sound when they talk, which I think is what was happening with this particular instructor. So I look at the students' Foundation's writing evaluation. And one part of the evaluation, they're actually asked to compose a very short reflection on which course they're choosing and why they're choosing it. This student had written one of the loveliest reflections I've ever read. So they said, I'm Vietnamese. You know, my parents moved all of us here when I was, you know, I think in maybe middle school. And I started taking ESL classes. I was learning English. You know, I've always been sort of like told that I need to improve my English. I need to be learning English. She shared that her sister, her older sister, was a University of Arizona student and had taken 101. And she said, I know that English 107 is for students like me who don't have English as their first language. And I was like, wow, you read the materials. Oh my God, you are so special. And then she said, but I'm afraid that if I don't take 101, my family will think less of me because, you know, they'll think I'm not as good as my sister, right? This is heartbreaking to me, by the way. Like, absolutely. I think the first time I told this story, I started to get a little verklempt because this instructor, you know, of course, in my head, I'm thinking, how dare you? How dare you make these assumptions about this student, that this student should have been in 106? Because of what? I mean, what were these linguistic features or, you know, features in their writing that this instructor thought somehow one semester in one class was going to fix? It boggles my mind, you know, that 16 weeks in a class is going to fix something that you think is wrong. Number one, nothing's wrong with this student. Nothing is wrong with them. Everything's right, in fact. They read the materials. They knew which course maybe would support them better in that English language acquisition that they thought maybe they were still in the midst of because so many teachers had told them along the way that they were still learning English. But it is the student's right to choose the class that they think is going to suit them best and to live up to that challenge if it's going to be a challenge for them.
Alex, did you have any stories that you would like to share?
It's not necessarily a story, but perhaps more an experience that I've had with international students, particularly, you know, the way that Erin is describing this. But there's this narrative that education is a challenge that you must rise up to meet. And if you don't, it demonstrates that you have no right to be there. Regardless of which course sequences that you're teaching, what courses you're teaching, is that you're going to get students from all over. And it's your job as an instructor to meet those students where they are and really, you know, help them consider how their previous experiences, not just as writers, but as students, fit in with their overall goal. Like, what is it that you're trying to accomplish, not just in your degree, but outside of it?
I know we're running out of time. But what are the top five things you would like advisors to know that would help them?
I think first, know what your writing program's curriculum emphasizes. Your first year writing courses are probably not doing the things that you think they're doing. So find out what they are doing. Talk to the people who teach in those programs and understand the curriculum. I like that, Meredith, you said the word misplacement as opposed to overplacement or underplacement. So I think we need to sort of move away from this idea of over or under because it kind of assumes that there is a baseline of skill that we can measure and the student falls over or under that baseline. But I think we need to have a much more well-rounded idea of why a student would choose a particular course. Right? And those don't necessarily have anything to do with academic preparation. And I think we need to honor that.
Framing the discussion about placements in terms of support. Don't even worry about the curriculum because at the end of the day, all of our instructors want our students to be successful in whatever environment. Reminding everyone that standardized tests do not tell the full story about any student. Taking AP classes does not mean that you've tested out of the curriculum, that you don't need the curriculum. It just means that you can follow directions and somebody says, yep, they followed the directions. Send them to advocate for themselves. And I guess to round off the list, I would say,
Are you adding a number five? Because I have a number five. We're on the same team. We really are. We are all advising students. And advisors, I want advisors to understand how much influence they have over students. So when a student comes to me and says, my advisor thinks I should be in 109 because I got a blah, blah, blah on my SAT, I want to tear my eyes out because I'm like, we don't use the SAT anymore. So it sort of goes back to my number one, like know what the procedures are, right? Like understand what the placement mechanisms are. And if you are at an institution, advisor listening right now, if you are at an institution that is still using standardized tests for placing students into your writing classes, get on my team and start advocating for directed self-placement or student self-placement methods or even multiple measures. It's a good middle ground. It's at least a way to transition to directed self-placement.
Thank you both so much for taking time out of your day today to talk to us about the Writing Center and guided placement and how it works for students and how advisors can help support our students.